Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. The Titans got their guy. Brian Callahan will be the Tennessee Titans' next head coach, former offensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals. And joining us to give a perspective from Cincinnati, what was Brian Callahan's role in Cincinnati? Is Mo Egger, who hosts Afternoon Drive for ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Mo, appreciate you for joining us. First and foremost, what are the Titans getting in their new head coach, Brian Callahan?
You know, I think the best examples that I could give you to illustrate his impact in Cincinnati, there's three of them. The first would be he was the offensive coordinator when the Bengals drafted Joe Burrow. Now, that sounds like a pretty easy gig, and to a degree it is, but they drafted Joe Burrow during the COVID year, during the pandemic. So no mini camp. Training camp was weird. They had to teach the offense virtually. He was sitting in his parents' house in Athens, Ohio, and yet in that first game, Joe Burrow played like a guy who was far more experienced than he actually was. I've always felt like the offensive coaching staff doesn't get the credit they deserve for getting him up to speed and getting him ready to play in the NFL week one with no preseason games at all. That's number one. I think number two, this team made the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And you guys obviously know, on their way, they beat the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans sacked Joe Burrow 9 times that day. Why? Because the offensive line was atrocious. I don't think this coaching staff has gotten the credit it deserves for figuring out ways to win hard games on the road, playoff games, tough regular season games, knowing that every single week they had to design game plans around an offensive line that was a disaster. They didn't take off offensively. They scored 5 touchdowns in the 3 playoff games they won, but they still designed functional game plans around an offensive line that was terrible. I think that's really good coaching. I think the other thing is, you know, you saw the Bengals at the end of the year. They hung in the race with a backup quarterback who had never played prior to this year in Jake Browning. And I think the job that the offensive coaching staff did in bringing him along, teaching him the system, getting him up to speed, and then kind of adjusting the way they call plays on the fly and the way the offense works on the fly using an offensive system that frankly was not entirely different, but visually much different from the one that Joe Burrow runs. I feel like the offensive coaching staff deserves a lot of that credit too. Obviously, Zach Taylor being the play caller is going to get a lot of that credit. I feel like Brian Callahan's role in doing each of those three things, though, has been instrumental, and it's why I think he deserves an opportunity to be a head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Mo Egger is with us, and that was one thing that Titans fans, the reaction of the hiring Brian Callahan, maybe one concern they had was, okay, well, how great of a coach is Brian Callahan, and also how much of it is just you have Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. But I think one chapter of that story that often goes overlooked is Jake Browning. You know, you have an undrafted free agent that comes in when Joe Burrow gets hurt. He ends up going 4-2 in the 6 games that he's a starter. What was Brian Callahan's role in the development of Jake Browning? And maybe what did you see as somebody who covers the team, his development, Jake Browning's development as a quarterback?
Yeah, I think if anything, what you saw is they didn't try to fit a square peg into a round hole. You know, with Joe Burrow, here's how the offense works. You put him in the shotgun, you give him an empty backfield, you let him read the defense and let him do his thing. With Jake Browning, it was a lot more under center with a running back, sometimes 2 running backs in the backfield. It looked like football in 1996. You know, just getting him, putting him in a position where they designed a really good screen game around what he does, giving him a chance to use, you know, misdirections and stuff like that, that we typically don't see, elements of the offense that we don't see when Joe Burrow was back there. I think that Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor and Dan Pitcher did a really good job of putting Jake Browning in a position where he could have some success. Now, the success was limited, I think, in large part because, you know, Jake is a backup quarterback. But I'll even go back to 2020, which was a miserable season for the Bengals. Joe Burrow, his rookie season, he gets hurt week 10. They were awful. And then at the end of the year, they win a game with Ryan Finley playing quarterback on Monday Night Football against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they win a game a week later with Brandon Allen playing quarterback on the road against the Houston Texans. I think all of that, plus the Jake Browning stuff, showed an ability to adjust on the fly, to adjust to circumstance, to adjust to the personnel they have, And again, you know, because Zach Taylor is the head coach and he's an offensive guy, whenever we talk about, you know, who should get the credit for those things, the conversation's going to start with him. But Brian Callahan has been instrumental in all of those things I just tried to outline.
We'll talk with Mo Eggert, 15:30 drive time there in Cincinnati. Now, Mo, more importantly than, you know, Brian coming here, it's, well, who is going to be his assistant coaches? And you mentioned one name that I brought up, Dan Pitchard, and then also Troy Walters. Can you see one of those guys or even both of those guys coming with them? And how difficult would it be to sort of get them out of their contract?
Well, the contractual stuff would probably require somebody who's looked at their contract. The Bengals, it's interesting. In their history, they've allowed coaches to leave if they've had opportunities to be coordinators. They've also blocked coaches who have had an opportunity to go be a coordinator. Marvin Lewis did that famously with Vance Joseph when he had a chance to go become a defensive coordinator, and he was the secondary coach. Frankly, we really haven't seen the Bengals deal with this over the last 5 years. The remarkable thing about getting to the Super Bowl 2 years ago and getting back to the AFC Championship game last year is they've held on to the same coaching staff. They've had continuity. So what Zach is going to do is, I think it remains to be seen. Marvin Lewis was a guy who would sort of go on a case-by-case basis. My guess is the Bengals will offer the offensive coordinator job to Dan Pitcher. And if they do so, my guess is he will accept that, because why wouldn't you want to remain tethered to Joe Burrow? Why wouldn't you want to do Brian Callahan's job and know that if you do it well, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get a look to be the head coach? I think Troy Walters is interesting because, look, if there's one thing the Bengals have become known for, it's being really good at the wide receiver position. You talk to Ja'Marr Chase, you talk to T. Higgins, you talk to Tyler Boyd, you talk to the two guys they drafted this year, Andre Yoshivash from Princeton and Charlie Jones from Purdue. They will each speak very effusively about Troy's role in their individual development. So my guess is, let's say Dan Pitcher were to leave and maybe not be offered the offensive coordinator job here, it's going to be because they want Troy Walter to be the guy. My guess is, though, that Dan's going to be offered the gig here. My guess is he would accept. And then we'll see how the Bengals handle it with Troy, because it's Zach Taylor and because he's so tight with Brian Callahan. My guess is he's going to want to give his buddy a chance to hire his own guys, which means pretty good chance he'll get somebody from the Cincinnati coaching staff.
Now, with that being said, you know, I think the part that, you know, that have, you know, people have sort of been skeptical about was the play calling part. But I'm not too worried about that, because I believe that, listen, he put in enough work during the week that he helped put together an offensive game plan for then Zach Taylor to go out and execute it. But can he be a leader of 53-plus men? How do the other players see Brian Callahan? Do they love him? Is he a guy that people sort of gravitated to within that organization?
They love Zach Taylor, and they view Brian Callahan as an extension of Zach Taylor, more of an extension of Zach Taylor than anybody on the staff. I think, you know, Zach took this job and the Bengals were an absolute mess. And so, you know, the number of things that were thrown at him those first 2 years, I don't know how any coach would have succeeded more than Zach did. And he won six games over those first two seasons. So what did that mean? It meant that Zach had to delegate a lot of responsibility. You know, he's trying to get his program going, trying to reestablish the culture. He's trying to flip the roster. He's trying to put his fingerprints all over the roster. He's trying to learn how to become a head coach for the first time. So by his own admission, he wasn't as in the weeds with developing the offense and setting a tone on the offensive side of the ball and coaching those guys up on the offensive side of the ball as much as he would like to be, as much as maybe he is now. Brian Callahan was really central to that. And I'll say this, you know, the Bengals, those first two seasons, it's easy to look at what they've done since 2021 and go, well, they've had better players, and that's true. I'll say this, and I said this often, Bengals went 2-14 with a terrible roster in 2019. They went 4-11-1 with only a slightly better roster in 2020. I never watched them and thought, these guys aren't playing hard. I never watched them and thought, this coaching staff is losing the locker room. I never watched that and thought, you know what, these guys want to play for somebody else. Is most of that a reflection of Zach Taylor? Yes. Is it also a reflection of the coaching staff as a whole? Without question. And again, the guy who I've always felt like is an extension of Zach Taylor is Brian Callahan. So I think that all reflects very well on him.
Mo Eggers with a sports talk show host up in Cincinnati. And Mo, I'm curious, as the Titans move on from the Derrick Henry era, it certainly looks like they're going to do that. It's not 100% certain, but maybe 90%. We'll put a number on it. But what about the running philosophy of Brian Callahan? How does he like to use his running backs? We were looking at Joe Mixon's numbers. Obviously, he was really good at his best, but they've used other guys. So how do you think he goes about it?
Well, I think if you're to look at the Bengals, again, at their most successful 2 years ago, Joe Mixon's a good NFL back, but he's not a guy who's going to hit a lot of home runs. This is also a team that as they have developed Joe Burrow and as they have, you know, added to the wide receiver room, look, their philosophy has been when we run the ball, we're doing what the other team's defensive coordinator wants us to do. So we're not going to feature the run. We're going to use the run to complement what we're trying to do, throwing the ball. I think if there is one thing that you could maybe – kind of glean from how he used his backs here. They adjusted from year to year what the scheme was going to look like because they never really had a great running game. But when he had Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine, he was able to use both in a way that made the most of their individual skill sets. With Joe Mixon, it's running powerfully. It's the ability to catch passes out of the backfield. With Samaje Perine, a far better running back in terms of pass protection, the guy they wanted in the two-minute drill. Without Samaje Perine this year, the running back room really never recaptured what they had in 2021 and 2022. They never leaned on one guy specifically, especially if you go back to 2022. They did a good job when Joe Mixon had to miss games of getting Samaje Perine to the point where he could, you know, be productive and spell Joe quite nicely. But the reality here is this has never been, at least since 2020, a run-first football team. It's always been, we want to run it effectively, we want to run it efficiently, but we want to run it sparingly because, as you could understand, we got Joe Burrow, we got T. Higgins, we got Ja'Marr Chase. We're going to let those guys do their thing. Toward the end of the season this year, though, when Jake Browning was the quarterback, they tapped into some things using the running backs. And again, if you go back and watch, they played the Indianapolis Colts. Their screen game that day was unlike anything I've ever seen. And I think most of that came or started on the desk of Brian Callahan.
You would have a much better feel for the Bengals' cap situation now in this new Joe Burrow contract than we would here. I think the dream for a lot of Titans fans is T. Higgins. He's from East Tennessee. Maybe he gets a cap squeeze. Could he hit the market, or do you think for sure the Bengals would tag him and keep him?
I think if you were to listen to Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor the day after the season ended, when, you know, first of all, Joe, there was no ambiguity about it, wants T. Higgins back. Zach Taylor later that day said, can't imagine life without T. Higgins. Now, I don't think that's going to add up to a long-term contract because invariably the math is going to catch up to you unless you don't want to re-sign Ja'Marr Chase, and they certainly do. I've gone from thinking, you know, we wondered when Joe got hurt this year, okay, has he thrown his last pass to T. Higgins? And you would find a lot of people who said yes. I think now, look, anybody with this organization who speaks on anything publicly is doing so in very measured tones. They're not going to come out and say something like, can't imagine life without T. Higgins, unless they plan on bringing him back. And so the expectation here is they franchise tag him. The Bengals have never done a franchise tag in trade, and so I don't think that's likely. I think we're going to be talking about it being sort of a lame duck season for T. Higgins and him hitting free agency at the end of this year. But the expectation, I think, for all involved is he will be a member of the Bengals in 2024.
We're talking with Mo Egger. He does Sports Talk Radio in Cincinnati. He's covered the Cincinnati Bengals for a long time. Mo, one thing that Amy Adams Strunk, Titans controlling owner, and general manager Rand Carthon has emphasized throughout this entire process is collaboration. That they want the head coach to work with the GM, to work with the owner, that they want it kind of to be an all-hands-on-deck process. Just based off of Brian Callahan's time in Cincinnati with Zach Taylor, What kind of collaborative process is he coming from? And does that seem like something that he would be fully on board with, is this quote-unquote collaborative process here in Tennessee?
Yeah, I think the fact that the Bengals have had, you know, obviously this year was disappointing from the standpoint of them not making the postseason. But, you know, if you look at the franchise turnaround, I think it's been mainly a result of some really good people doing a really good job of working with each other. And most importantly, in Cincinnati, the owner allowing them to do what they want to do. I think Duke Tobin, who is the de facto general manager here, would tell you the quality and depth of the roster that they enjoyed in 2021 and 2022 was the result of a coaching staff that had a certain vision and a player personnel guy whose vision meshed with what the coaches brought in. You know, Duke Tobin has been here forever. And so, you know, they kind of the coaching staff sort of walked into somebody who was already in charge of building the roster. And I think they did a really good job. This wasn't Duke picks the players, Zach and Brian and Lou Anarumo coach them. It was Duke's going to have final say. I guess the owner can have veto power. But the way they build the roster is going to occur very much through the lens of Zach Taylor and then his hand-selected coaches. And so, yeah, you know, I think if you were to look, I'll go back to 2021, the draft. They had the number 5 overall pick. Everybody argues, should they take a wide receiver, Jamar Chase, or an offensive tackle in Penei Sewell? Neither decision would have been wrong. And both guys are very good players, but everybody was on board with, we're taking Jamar. And that decision came at the end of a very long, drawn-out process where they discussed trading the pick. They discussed the merits of taking a lineman. They discussed the merits of taking Jamar Chase. They discussed every conceivable possibility. Ultimately, they got it right. Nothing against Penei Sewell. And I think that decision strongly was influenced by every coach we've talked about, Dan Pitcher, Troy Walter, Zach Taylor. But Brian Callahan had a lot to do with it as well.
I thought that move was crazy at the time that they did it. And that's saying something. I went to LSU and I thought that was crazy. But it shows how much I know about what Joe Burrow needed around him. Mo Egger is with us. Last one for you, Mo. If there was in maybe a few words that could kind of summarize what Brian Callahan has been able to do with quarterbacks, I think I view this move as the Titans bringing in a coach to help Will Levis, to help the young quarterback. How would you describe maybe his work and his relationships with the quarterbacks that you've seen him work with in Cincinnati?
Didn't screw it up. Knew what they had. Look, we got a guy we can turn over the entire team to. We got a guy that we don't need to fix. We got a guy. We're going to build everything we do around this guy. And that sounds simple. Mm-hmm. And I do think, I'll go back to that first year, the fact that they got Joe ready to play the first game is something that to this day I don't think it's talked about enough. But look, you know how this league works, man. Everybody wants to show how smart they are. This staff and Brian Callahan, I'll say in particular, were very good at, okay, we've got a Corvette. We've got a Ferrari. We've got the keys to it. Let's not go and screw it up. And let's surround him with the guys he needs to succeed. Let's build a system that really plays to his strengths. And it worked. It worked. And, you know, again, people are going to make a big deal about Brian Callahan not calling the plays. I think if you understand the process of building an offense and building it with the pieces that they had and have in place now, you understand that the offensive coordinator, regardless of whether he's screaming the call into the headset of the quarterback, is very instrumental in that process.
Mo, you mentioned a Ferrari. Obviously, Jake Browning is probably not a Ferrari, but he played really well. It was intriguing there. Do you think he could be a starter someday in the league?
Someday, yes. Yeah, I'm of the belief he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the league, and Jake Browning will tell you that. The thing is, he can't go anywhere. He is an exclusive rights, restricted free agent, which essentially means, as you guys know, Bengals put a piece of paper in front of him, and if Jake Browning wants to be an NFL player in 2024, he has no choice but to sign it. I think he played well enough that you could imagine him being a starting QB in the NFL. I think the Bengals value the depth at that position. And look, Joe Burrow has played 4 seasons. 2 of them have been interrupted by injury. I think they love the idea of having a reliable and cheap backup quarterback. And Jake Browning has expressed he understands it. He's resigned to that fate in the short term. What he could hope for is that he takes advantage of an opportunity again if it presents it to him here in Cincinnati. And at the very least, that the work he did with the Bengals is remembered by coaches and personnel people when he finally does hit free agency later down the road.
Mo Egger, Mo, appreciate you for joining us. Thank you for your time and all of your insight, and we'll be chatting with you soon.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Mo Egger, he does fantastic work covering the Cincinnati Bengals and sports in Cincinnati with Sports Talk in Cincinnati. We'll react to what Mo Egger had to say there, some insight as to what went on behind the scenes with the offensive coaching staffs with the Bengals. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll also get into your phones as well. Your reaction to Brian Callahan being named the new head coach of the Tennessee Titans. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Billy, DeMace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Plus, you can also tune into 94.9 The Fan this Saturday for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores will take on Tennessee at home. That'll be a fun game. Tip-off is at 5 p.m. with pregame beginning at 4:30 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app.
You know, you saw the Bengals at the end of the year. They hung in the race with a backup quarterback who had never played prior to this year in Jake Browning. And I think the job that the offensive coaching staff did in bringing him along, teaching him the system, getting him up to speed, and then kind of adjusting the way they call plays on the fly and the way the offense works on the fly using an offensive system that frankly was not entirely different, but visually much different from the one that Joe Burrow runs. I feel like the offensive coaching staff deserves a lot of that credit too. Obviously, Zach Taylor being the play caller is going to get a lot of that credit. I feel like Brian Callahan's role in doing each of those three things, though, has been instrumental, and it's why I think he deserves an opportunity to be a head coach.
Welcome.
All right, there you go. That was Mo Egger, who does Sports Talk Radio in Cincinnati. Longtime radio host in Cincinnati. He's been covering the Bengals for a long time. Appreciate him for joining us in the last segment. Now, D-Base, one thing that we've talked a lot about throughout the coaching search, one thing that you've brought up is need to find that leader of men. You need to find somebody that's able to establish and maintain culture. Because culture is easy when you're winning. Mm-hmm. It's not very easy when you're losing.
Ask Philadelphia.
Exactly. I think they're experiencing that with the AJ saga. That's something that you brought up today that we talked about. Okay, some Titans fans are concerned that he never called plays in Cincinnati. Now Brian Callahan will call plays for the Titans. That's a concern. How much of Cincinnati's success was due to Brian Callahan, and really how much was it due to the personnel? You said your number one concern is, can Brian Callahan be a leader of men? That's something that you asked Mo Egger. Do you feel any better now hearing Mo Egger's testimony of Brian Callahan?
The testimony of Mo Egger.
I mean, yes, in the sense of because he's right. And see, this is what we talked about earlier too. Uh-huh. Is okay, everybody wants to be in that seat, or everybody wants to be in that room, but once you actually get in that room or get in that seat, can you handle what comes along? Willie brought up, you know, Fox and Coach John Fox and what he described in you know, becoming a head coach and how much it entails and all this other stuff. You just don't think about that stuff, or you can't think about it because you're so in tune with what you're doing as an OC or a DC. You're not thinking about all these other things that sort of comes up that head coaches have to take care of. So to me, I am not worried about the play calling. I'm not. That's down the line. I'm worried about three or four other things before I even get to the play calling. I'm worried about this roster, who they're going to put in front of, you know, the quarterback, get more receivers. I'm worried about that stuff. I'm not worried about who called plays and all that, because obviously, from what we're gathering, he had a big hand in what was going on offensively during the week. And those two would seem to be so in lockstep that even if I wasn't calling the plays, I knew exactly what he was going to get ready to call based upon down the distance, you know, based upon the team that we were playing. My thing is, can he lead this 53-plus man roster? Because everything is not going to be sweet. It's not. You're going to have your highs and you'll have your lows. Everybody is on board when things are going great. You don't hear no rumblings. Everybody's coming into work, happy, getting there 30, 40, 2 hours early. Everybody's just like, let's go into the building because we're winning. Then when you start losing, it's different. It's different. You heard Derrick Henry say, this locker room's different. Mm-hmm. That was out of his mouth. This locker room's different.
AJ became a big old pain in the butt this year when the Eagles weren't winning games. When but last year winning, when they went to the Super Bowl, he seemed like the happiest little clam in Philadelphia.
So you got to be able to, and that's one thing you got to give to Vrabel, is that he was able to keep it together.
The 2020, when everybody, remember they got completely buried by the national media for violating the protocols and they couldn't practice for a long time. And then they just showed up and beat the Bills.
Exactly.
Like, that was a good indicator that
he kept that
he could keep
them
together.
And that's what Callahan's going to have to be able to do.
And I remember Teresa Walker asked him the question, you know, how did you galvanize? I think it was the word that she uses. And he said, you have to be galvanized before the storm hits, right? You can't just say, oh, the storm's coming. We better galvanize. Like, you already have to be galvanized.
Right.
I think that's a good point. And Vrabel, that's a good trait of his. Here's something that encouraged me along those lines. I was reading The Athletic, and this was a writer. I assume he's a Bengals writer. Paul, I don't want to say his name wrong, D-E-H-N-E-R, Daner?
He was on Robbie and Rexford this morning.
Okay, so a really interesting perspective, because he has talked to Callahan about this. And Callahan talked about the early portion of the Zach Taylor regime when they were 0-11. Now, you talk about challenging and trying to build a culture through some tough times. That was definitely challenging. And then you go into 2020 and not being able to be with your team and all that stuff. So they built it through some big-time storms. So that's a feather in his cap there. He also talked about, you know, I think his dad probably, he could see some things growing up on what a winning culture looks like, how you deal with some of those things. He also referred Denner to the speech by Theo Epstein about, you know, understanding leadership. And Epstein gave a talk to Yale about the 2016 Cubs and just, you know, his experience watching guys go through tough times. In a baseball season, you always go through tough times. The Predators right now going through a little bit of a dip. How do you hold it all together? But I think Callahan has definitely studied this. So I think all you can do is prepare yourself for when you actually have, you know, the leadership position.
I think
you don't know if you can do it until you go through it. But he certainly has been taught by some good people. He's been through some stuff, and he clearly values this.
Yes, you don't know unless you go through it. But before you go through it, you got to be prepared. You got to have people around you, or you got to be watching what that guy is doing that is in that particular seat. You know, when Mo said that, I was, you know, it doesn't ease all of the anxiety, but it does say, okay, he's right. Because when you got a young team, young first-year head coach, he's like a deer in the headlights. Everything he's trying to make sure, because he has to touch everything on the team. So you got to have someone that knows the pulse of the team, because he has to be everywhere. That's why it's going to be very critical who he hires as his assistant, because those assistants, while he's out there being the CEO and managing everything, his assistants are the guys that have their ear to the ground, that have their pulse to these players. It's seven receivers in a receiver room. I go in there, I get the pulse of them. We all get in a meeting. So, you know, what's going on in your receiver room? Tell me about it. What's going on in your running back room? Tell me about it. Evaluate these players. Now, because I'm hearing everything from each one of these guys, now I can get a pulse of the team. When I go in front of the team, I know over here what's going on. I know over there what's going on. There's not a spot on my team that I don't know about. Why? Because I am in lockstep with my assistant coaches. That's why it's imperative for him to hire guys that think like him, that move in the same direction as him. And, you know, obviously it all filters down. That's how a young coach is going to be able to navigate all of this, is if everybody's on board and I'm getting, you know, voices from everybody in their particular room, so I can sort of formulate it all and figure out, okay, how do I move forward in being the leader of all these men? Because it's all different personalities.
And it's not only important for him to hire the right assistants. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for Rand and Amy to let him hire his own assistants. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the right assistant or not. Again, time will tell if it's the right assistant or not. He needs to be able to make that decision. And speaking of Rand and that relationship, Amy Adams Strunk did tell us when she sat down with Mike Keith, I'll let you know who has final say. I'm going to be honest. I don't think that Brian Callahan has the pedigree or the skins on the wall to be able to have final say of an NFL organization. I think that he can collaborate because when I mentioned Paul Dana was on Robbie and Rexard this morning, that's one thing that he said is everyone offense in the offensive coaching room collaborated on game plans. And Mo Egger mentioned with us that everyone that was in that draft room, Brian Callahan included, they all put their hands in the middle and said, Jamar Chase on 3-1-2-3, Jamar Chase. That they all kind of, for lack of a better word, collaborated in decision-making. That I think that he should be in the conversations. He should have a seat at the table. But when it comes to final roster say of I'm the one that is kind of pulling the trigger on who we're going to draft, who we're going to trade, who we're going to trade for, I don't think that should be Brian Callahan. I think
it should be Rand Carthon. In lockstep instead
can
of collaboration.
New terminology.
Let's
use some more words. That's good. I like that idea. Shake it up a little bit. I think about that a lot as a hockey announcer because if you use the same terms every time, you'll say the same five or six things because the same things happen over and over and over.
Right.
You got to think about different ways to say the same thing. I know there's like the whole fraternity is like, how do you say centering pass or shot on goal? Is there, right. There's different ways to say shot. There's a million different ways. But
work together.
Yes. So let's work on that. Uh-huh. I'm curious, too, the big picture here. Uh-huh. You've got a first-time general manager who's pretty young, a first-time head coach who's pretty young. Uh-huh. And they've got to work together, collaborate, et cetera, lockstep, all these things, right? But that's, I think, what a great
synergy,
challenge.
Yes.
How many head coach GM tandems have, A, that little experience, and B, any younger? Like, is that the lowest average age of coach general manager? It's got to be up there, right?
It may be. They may be the youngest coach GM tandem. Buffalo, when McDermott first got the job.
I really don't know. I'm just guessing off the top of my head. It's got to be among the younger / most inexperienced. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that, it's not going to work or anything, but it's a great challenge. It's part of the story.
Yeah. No, it is. I'm sure they will, find a way to make it work. It's good that he was able to hire their guy. Like, this is the guy we want. It wasn't a fixed marriage or anything else. It was we went out, and whether he was your guy from the onset or not, we all went out and we got the guy that we wanted. So now we're all in lockstep. We all have, the synergy is there.
I can't help but laugh now.
I'm trying not to say.
The synchronicity.
Yeah.
The synchronization.
We're all synchronized here. And if you got another word, Nick, you can say it too.
I don't. I'll think of one.
Yeah, but they're all, they're all on the same sort of
wavelength.
As far as what they're thinking and moving forward.
So
it's good to see. It's refreshing because we find, just think about this. Since they moved here in Tennessee, they've never come out of this run first mentality. Now, listen, defense is defense. But I looked at teams like Pittsburgh, Baltimore, the Giants. Giants are known for their defense. They are. You go back to LT, Carson, all those dudes, when they won Super Bowls, they were flat-out ballers. Their offense was sort of anemic at times. They did enough, with Carthon and Bravaro and those guys to move the ball down the field. But
those
they won
the times too in football when you could afford to be maybe not elite on offense.
Absolutely, but the defense. So I look at those teams, but what did those teams eventually have to do? They had to evolve. Pittsburgh evolved. They were more of a three wide receiver set. They still ran the football, but they opened it up with Big Ben. They allowed him to throw the ball down the field. You see what Baltimore is doing now with Lamar Jackson. They're still running the football, but we got to open this thing up, you know, in order to win games. The Titans, if forever, they were still holding on to that philosophy of great defense, run the football, oh, and we have pass if we need to. You got to come out of that. You can't win at a clip that you need to win if you're not throwing the football. You, and that's not a bad word. Throwing a football is not a bad word. Yes, you're going to be balanced, but when teams think of you, what are they going to be thinking of? You want to change that narrative of running a football, planting a fumble. You want to change that. We can still do it at times, but we want to get the ball down the field.
You know what that just made me think of? Mm-hmm. Rand Carthon's introductory press conference.
And I always go back to that, too. And what did we say when he said that?
He said, I don't want to play Golden State Warriors football. But we said, that's who wins Super Bowls. Like, the Kansas City Chiefs play Golden State Warriors mm-hmm. football. But it does sound like Brian Callahan is way more of a pass-heavy kind of offensive mind. Is that something that Rand Carthon is now saying, look, dude, it's your offense. I defer to you, and I'll just bring you the players that you need.
I think Rand was deferring to Mike when he said that. I could be completely wrong here. I have no inside knowledge of it. But when he said that, in my mind, I think he's placating to Mike Vrabel and what he wants to do. But because the teams he came from, I mean, they threw the football.
Yeah.
They did. They ran it. But when I thought of Atlanta with Julio Jones, and I thought of throwing the football. I didn't think of running, but they ran it. San Fran, I didn't think of running the football, but they ran it.
You
I thought
need to run the football.
You have to run the football in this day and age. But you better have a pass game that can put up points and put up points quickly. When you're down 10 points with 5 minutes left, running the football ain't an option. It's not an option. We got to score points and score points right away. I'm hoping that's Brian Callahan's philosophy. Let's put the pressure on the defense. We're going to run the football. Mm-hmm. We'll do that.
Cincinnati but, runs
exactly.
the football.
But we're going to put the pressure on the defense to stop us from throwing the football.
All right, we'll wrap up our final thoughts of, I guess, what we're going to call Brian Callahan Day
yeah.
on the program. and we'll do that coming up next. Hey, 102.5 and 106.3, The Game is officially inviting you to our first ever Super Saturday. Join us in Come Hungry Saturday, February 10th at New Heights Brewing for all the soup you can handle from some of the finest restaurants in Middle Tennessee. Bring the family and enjoy delicious soup, live music, games for kids, and so much more. It is our first ever Super Saturday benefiting the Nashville Predators Foundation. More details coming, including how to purchase tickets. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Now, Brian Callahan, last night it was announced that he will be the Titans' next head coach. Now, one thing that I do want to remind everyone is it's really easy today on Coach's first day, leading up to the press conference, it's really easy to feel like everything is peachy. You haven't lost any games yet. Everything right now is a clean slate. That you are now the, you know, the new kid in town, and everything is great and wonderful, and he's going to turn Will Levis into an elite quarterback, and the Titans are going to go to the Super Bowl, and go team go. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Really easy to feel that way today. But also what I want everyone to keep in mind is there's going to be hard days. There's going to be games that you lose. There's going to be times when you feel like, eh, this is not the guy. He might not be the guy. He might be the guy. We don't know that yet. Again, I think the theme of the day is time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if he's going to be the guy. We're not going to know tomorrow if he's going to be the guy. We don't know after game one if he's going to be the guy. We might not even know after year one if he is going to be the guy. Everything feels great and wonderful, or if you were Team Mike Vrabel, it might just feel like the world is falling that Mike Vrabel won't be the Titans head coach next year. But give it some time. Overall, I think today's a good day for the Tennessee Titans because they brought in a coach for Will Levis and to help him develop to eventually possibly become this team's franchise quarterback.
Yeah, you know, if you listen to Mo Eggert, which you can go back and listen to on our app, he talked about, he chronicled, you know, Cincinnati's, you know, they wasn't great the first couple of years, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, but he said he never thought that Taylor lost the locker room or this team was headed in the wrong direction. They were just a bad team that needed to get better. And obviously they hit a home run with their quarterback and they hit another home run with their receiver. And you see where they're at now, minus all the injuries. And I think that's sort of how you got to envision the Titans. That, listen, everybody wants to start off like D'Amico Ryans. Who doesn't, you know? Everybody wants to start off like, you know, Steichen in Philadelphia. Is it Philadelphia, Steichen?
Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. He started off well, too, but Philly's coach.
Sirianni.
Yeah, Sirianni. Everybody would love to start off like that, but sometimes it's not that way. This roster needs to be built up.
And even Nick Sirianni's job was in question at the end of the season.
But this roster needs to be built up, so it's going to take him a minute. That's why I said more important than him being able to call plays, how does he keep this locker room together and all, you know, aimed and looking forward in looking in the same direction? Because the way this roster looks is going to take a lot to build it up, which means there are going to be some hard times in here over the next couple of seasons. And if you look at this team, even while they're losing and you're thinking, okay, the coach got command of what's going on, they just need to, then that's a good sign. But if it's the other way, they're losing and you think that's not good at all.
All you can say today is that, does the pick make sense? Mm-hmm. Does it fall into line with what you're trying to do? Yes. Is he prepared for the job? Is he a good candidate? Yes. Was it an attractive job to good candidates? Yes. I think that's all you can say today. Mm-hmm. But so that's where I think the positive vibe is coming from here. Yes. It may not work, but I think they got the guy they were looking for, and he's a qualified guy.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Also, a little bit of news. Jim Harbaugh is, quote, in striking distance of getting a deal done to be the Chargers' next head coach.
Mm. So what does that mean when it comes to Jim? Striking distance can mean we're right there or what?
That's up to interpretation. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.